This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to the first edition of Box to Box on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport, a radio program devoted to all things football. I'm Rob Gilbert and together with my co-host Michael Edgley, every week we'll review the latest in the world game. This show is all about delivering the football people of Australia a radio conversation that digs deep into the issues of the game, both on and off the pitch, hopefully with the right mix of seriousness and fun. Now there's a lot of programs on TV about the domestic game these days and plenty focusing on the international scene, but there are precious few opportunities for the fan, expert and part-time enthusiast alike to sink their teeth into the genuine football analysis and conversation that they want to. Box to Box, as the name implies, intends to rectify that by covering the whole spectrum of the game from one end of the pitch to the other. Of course, top of the agenda every week is going to be the A-League and whatever news is breaking on the domestic level, with a specific focus on the Socceroos and their qualification trail to the World Cup in Russia 2018 and whatever tournaments they're in the process of qualifying for. We'll also be spending plenty of time on the English Premier League and the other major European competitions, including La Liga, Serie A and the Bundesliga. Of course, the Matildas have installed themselves as one of the rising stars of team sport in this country with their epic performance in the Women's World Cup, so we'll be staying across everything to do with our girls. Aussies abroad and every corner of the game from South and North America to Africa and Asia. And of course, a show like this wouldn't be complete without the voices from the terrace. We put together a lineup of experts famous for their hard-hitting opinions, and each week we'll chat to the likes of Ned Zelich and Craig Foster, among others. But first up tonight, the hardest hitter of the lot, both literally and figuratively, John Cosmina will be along to talk the Socceroos and the FFA Cup. Some of the most authoritative journalists in the country, including The Age's Michael Lynch and Sebastian Hassett from the Sydney Morning Herald, they'll feature regularly. But tonight, we'll hook into the business of football with the man who knows more about the subject than anyone in this country, John Stensolt, who, among other strings to his bow, is sports business feature writer with the Australian Financial Review. I reckon that about covers off what Box to Box is all about. So welcome, Michael. It's been a while in coming, and now we're here.
Great intro, Rob. Fantastic to be with you. Really excited about what's ahead for the next 2 hours. But don't forget, we've got some regulars on the show. We're going to have football royalty, Dean Hennessy. He's going to be talking A-League. We're going to have Ben Soro Perez, a new name to Australian listeners, but he's our European football correspondent. We're going to enjoy Ben's contributions. And, of course, our news hand, and he's here with us in the studio now. Mark Van Aken. He's got all the news. Let's go with it.
Thanks, guys. Of course, the big news this week has been the EPL broadcast rights going from Fox Sports across to Optus. We'll talk to John, well, you guys will talk to John Stensolt at length a little bit later from the Financial Review. Fox, I can tell you, speaking to some insiders, are in a bit of a panic at the moment. The deal is worth $60 million over 3 years. Impact on the A-League rights. Michael, you got your hand up.
I just want to know, do you think some of those commentators have made the calls around to SBS, to Channel 9? Are they just sort of manoeuvring? It's been a pretty comfortable experience for those guys at Fox Sports. What do you think, Mark?
I think it's too early for that. And again, John will have some opinions on that. I think the big question that we need to delve into on the show is, okay, and it's a question that's been asked everywhere on social media, right throughout media in general this week. Okay, Optus has got the rights. What does that mean? How do we actually watch it? How's it going to happen? There's obviously, I've got a lot of ideas on that. John will obviously have those ideas too, Rob.
And I know we'll talk to John about this as well, but is it possible that Optus might on-sell to Fox Sports? Is that an option?
I think anything's on the table at this point. I've got the feeling that Optus didn't really expect to win and that they're probably scrambling now going, oh, geez, we've won. How do we actually deliver this? And at the same time, I know Fox, they're even just listening to them, I think on Mumbrella, there was a piece today. Earlier in the week, they were kind of, oh, it doesn't matter. It's not a big loss for us. That's not a big revenue driver, which I think is rubbish. I think it is one of the major drivers of subscriptions to Foxtel. Obviously, the AFL, the NRL, football is a big one
and
as well.
And part of the problem as well, of course, is that with Fox Sports having the A-League, you've got that talent list that's at the moment fabulous, but they work across both competitions, don't they? So how are they going to keep a lot of these guys in their jobs? Are they going to be able to keep up the same kind of standard as A-League?
Well, that's the question I want you guys to ask John. John will probably have a good idea on that a little later in the show, because in theory, this should mean that the TV rights for the A-League are worth more. But it may work the other way, because it's the umbrella was the Premier League. The A-League's a little one underneath. Anyway, I'll leave that up to the experts, Rob Gilbert and Mike Edgley, later in the show. Moving on, Police Association of New South Wales President Scott Webber has labelled Western Sydney Wanderers fans as grubs as he calls for the sacking of Senator David Lionhelm after the poly used the term ACAB, which apparently is All Cops Are Bastards. Very nice. Several times, the Senator's also advocated flare-friendly zones inside stadiums as part of his nanny state parliamentary inquiry. Rob, I reckon I can see you down the front with your flare.
Yeah, that'd be you, wouldn't it, Mark? I know we're going to have long conversations about that issue over the journey, but I think that's one point where he's 100% correct.
Australian football great Josip Skoko will present the Mark Viduka medal to the best player at the 2015 FFA Cup final on Saturday night at Amy Park. Meanwhile, Ben Williams has been appointed the referee for the cup decider. Moving through, Ollie Roos head coach Aurelio Vidmar this week named a 22-player squad to play international friendlies against Qatar and Iran on the 12th and 16th of November in Doha and Dubai, respectively. The bulk of the squad is overseas-based, with eight drawn from the ranks of the A-League, plus Aaron Lennox and Brad Smith, I think ex-Liverpool, who are currently uncontracted. This will be the final opportunity for Vidmar to work with these players before naming his squad for the AFC Under-23 Championship in Doha next January. Michael, a spot in Rio is on the line.
Just what we need, Mark. Another trip to Rio. Absolutely. Pressure on this age group within the whole elite setup. We have underperformed at Olympic level. Everybody will be watching.
Got there at Olympic level for the last few times. That's been a problem.
2000 was the last time, wasn't it, when it was here in Australia, and we got an entry point.
Athens.
Yeah, that's right. So, look, I think it's absolutely crucial that we qualify for Olympics. Everybody would agree with that. However, form suggests we're going to find it difficult.
Oh, it's going to be tough, Rob. And these are crucial games in the lead-up.
Well, you look at the World Cup, the Joeys, the other day. They did brilliantly well until they came up against Nigeria. Now, we thought that they'd faced off against some of the world heavyweights, and then we get smashed by 6 goals.
Well, we didn't start the tournament super well. I think it was Germany 4-1. Obviously had a famous win over Argentina. There was the draw with Mexico. It was a bit of a mixed bag. There were certainly some positives to come out of the tournament. Be interesting to see. I know Dean Hennessy's coming on to talk all things A-League, but he's the kind of brain you'd want to pick on. Okay, is the glass half full or half empty? And, of course, Aurelio Vidmar hasn't got time, really, to dwell. He's going to move on to the under-23s.
But I think the underlying point there is that we all love to talk about the fabulous depth and the pedigree and where our young players are playing around the world, but it's only in these big tournaments where the yardstick is really tested, isn't it, if we are able to, first of all, qualify and then perform respectably.
No, exactly right. Michael, I don't know if you caught any of the games, but I know against Argentina, it was like something like 27 shots to 10 that the Argentines had, and they were really coming in that game. So, look, I don't want to be too negative, but we can't just hang our hat on beating Argentina and just having that one result. And we've got a habit of doing that, particularly at junior tournaments, of going and beating a Brazil or an Argentina. I think it was the first time we've beaten Argentina. I know we've beaten Brazil. We seem to beat Brazil quite a lot in the group stage, but then don't turn it on in the second round. And, of course, don't forget, too, yeah, we got through the group, but we did finish third. We were basically the lucky loser, so to speak, Mike.
Absolutely. Look, the Joeys, I think you have to celebrate we got through to the round of 16. I think you have to celebrate that. There's no question that was a good performance. However, I think getting beaten 6-0 by Nigeria, and look, I don't think Nigeria would be the top of the pops of all the youth development programs in the world. There would have been a huge amount of natural talent just in that team. I think something we need to reflect on, and I know the FFA, with its whole of football program, the whole youth development structure, all of that needs to be considered.
Moving on to the A-League, gentlemen, this evening, Sydney FC take on the Brisbane Roar. If Sydney does beat Brisbane, it'll be their best ever start to an A-League campaign after 5 games. They're currently sitting 3 wins and a draw. The Roar's Dimi Petratos has scored 4 goals in his last 5 A-League appearances against Sydney, which is his former club. Loves banging them home against the old mob. The last fixture between these two sides, you might recall, had the joint highest amount of goals in an A-League game, 9. Mark Yanko scored a hat-trick. We won't be having that, of course. Moving on to tomorrow, the Jets take on the Wanderers. Jets looking to win 3 consecutive games for the first time since November 2013. Western Sydney's only managed 1 win in their last 16 away A-League games. I know, Rob, they were celebrating the fact that it was 12 months since their Asian Champions League glory, but it's been another slow start to the campaign for Tony Popovich's Wanderers.
Yeah, look, one of my brothers, his wife and their 3 kids are foundation members at Wonderland. They love the place. They're supporters of all sport in Australia, and they've loved them since day one, and they've followed the journey. And look, they're far from getting jaded or disenchanted at all, but I think with the
they will soon.
Well, I think it's fair to say that some supporters will, that Tony Popovich led them to glory early, and they need to see some results.
History says when you turn over large numbers of a squad in a club competition like the A-League, you're going to struggle. The Wanderers have done that.
Okay, and the last, well, they have, there's been four, I think it's 14 players have moved on. It might even be as much as 18. Last game on Sunday, gents, Central Coast Mariners up against the Phoenix. Mariners have scored, now this is a fun little stat, the Mariners have scored goals in their last 12 A-League matches, but managed just one goal on 10 of those occasions. So Tony Walmsley, he's wanting to play this free attacking style, but he's not really getting the goals at this point, and no player has created more chances or assists for his teammates than Phoenix's Michael McGlinchey. So an interesting game up at Gosford on Sunday.
Fabulous stuff, Mark. We will welcome you back later on in the program. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. Up next, Dean Hennessy talking all things A-League.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Broadcasting on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio and streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for us on TuneIn Radio. So welcome back, and welcome also to Dean Hennessy talking all things A-League.
Well, we've got football royalty with us, Dean. Rob, we should actually introduce Dean and let people know who he is, because we know who he is. He is football royalty. He's the son of Tex. Terry Hennessy, over 400 games in the Old English First Division, the precursor to the Barclays Premier League. Not only that, over 50 times captain of Wales. He's Mark Pelle. Dean's father is a legend. We're going to pump him up here. But not only that, Dean is the father of Matt. Matt Hennessy, last week, playing for Hume City in the FFA Cup semi-final, did his English exam in the morning and marked Ben Kafala in the evening.
Fahid Ben Kafala.
I tell you what, that's pretty good. But don't forget, we're just not going to refer to Dean as, you know, son of Tex and father of Matt. No, no, no. Dean also, he played a few games. Dean actually played over 200 games in the Victorian Premier League. He's coached, I think, five Premier League clubs successfully, depending on whether you suggest avoiding relegation or not is a good result. I think it's a pretty good result. But not only that, he's now the technical. He's the old father time out at Hume City. He's the technical director of Hume City, who were the FFA Cup giant killers. Dino, welcome to Box to Box.
Well, thanks, Rob and Ed. That was a lovely introduction. It's great to be aboard, and looking forward to looking at the A-League highlights from last week, and also the up and coming week that we're looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, welcome, mate. And look, as we said at the top of the show, we really do want to talk all things A-League, and we want to talk with experts, but we want to talk about the highlights of round four to get started. So, mate, take us away.
Well, look, it was a great round in round four. There were five victories, no draws, 16 goals, so plenty and plenty of action. Victories to Melbourne Victory, to Western Wanderers, Brisbane Roar, Sydney FC, and also Newcastle Jets. But there was so many things we could have talked about, and I think I've just chosen most probably three of my favourite things that happened on the weekend, which will then build it up into round five to make it even more exciting.
Yeah, and Matt Simon's double was the first of those against the Mariners.
Look, it was, and you know, Matt Simon leaving there in the pre-season just before, you know, like the season kicked off, and then to come on and sub, score two goals, win the game. And one of them was a great finish. So from his point of view, you know, he might have had a bit of mixed feelings, obviously playing for the Mariners for so long, but fabulous finish. And most probably what came out of that as well was it was a double whammy of the highlight reel. Was we had Graham Arnold's celebration of the goals, and obviously there's obviously a lot of feeling between obviously Graham Arnold, who was coached at the Mariners and won there as a champion coach of the A-League, but also the fact that, you know, John Hutchinson, one of the assistants, is a player that played for him for many years. So there was a little bit of celebration from Arnie with regards to the goal that was scored, obviously, not just once, but twice. And, you know, a bit of feeling felt on the bench. So made it really good theatre.
But that's one of the things I'm really liking about the A-League, though, is that there's a lot of chopping and changing, a lot of moving around, a lot of players played for different clubs, coaches coaching different clubs. But it's adding to the tapestry that is the ongoing history that we're seeing created out of the competition.
Oh, it is. You know, like, there are players out there, and Hutch was one of them, where he pretty well, apart from one little stint in Asia, played his whole career at you know, the one club at Central Coast Mariners. But on the flip side of that, when they do move, you know, it's whether a coach moves or even a player moves, there is that part that does become the tapestry, and there's history, and it just really builds it to even a more exciting league.
Dean, there's a lot of emotive local issues at Central Coast. How do you think the fans would have felt about Matt Simon, you know, banging in those two goals, Graham Arnold giving a bit of lip to the bench? Do you think? I'm just sensing there's a bit of a divergence already. It's only round four, but some of the fans are not happy with the Brains Trust at Central Coast.
No, look, it might be. Look, it's a new duo, and it's always hard when they've had success. From really when the franchise started, you know, they've had good success, and it's been a difficult franchise for them with, you know, where they're located, but the supporters have stuck with them. They've always played a decent brand of football. But I think, yeah, look, it's always hard when you go in there and you're inexperienced, let's say, in A-League terms. And I think that's where Arnie comes into his own. He's, you know, he's an international coach. He's played internationally himself in foreign countries. He was a great National League, you know, goal scorer. I remember watching him myself.
Couple of games
against him. Sorry, yeah, I'm talking about Graham Arnold.
No, I'm talking about that nickname I used to love, Goal Again Arnie.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, exactly right. And I think what he does is he utilises all that experience to use that against maybe some more inexperienced opposition. And again, that makes back to what you were talking about earlier, Rob, about the theatre. Mm. So I think Central Coast has just got to stick together. I mean, there obviously are some internal things, you know, with Liam Reddy and what's happened with the PFA. So, yeah, there's most probably a bit more to read out there, I think.
Yeah, and you talk about that tapestry and the colour and the vibrancy. There were 25,000 people at Eddie Had Stadium. It felt like there were 50,000 people there. The question then is, should it have been played at Amy? Because it would have been just about a full house heaving against the Phoenix. But Bessart Berisha, what more can you say about that bloke? He had a slightly slow start with his victory career, but, geez, that slow start is long gone in terms of history. And my favourite was, well, look, the way he dodged and weaved after Guy Flinker put that ball into him, into the box to score that first goal. But the desperation of that second goal.
I think, you know, that's, you know, when we talk about characters and what people bring to the game. I mean, we've got imports that have come over, you know, your Dwight Yorks in the early days, your Del Pieros in recent times. And they've, you know, been a really, really good thing for the league and the brand. But when you look about an individual, a single individual that stands out for most probably for me, the best asset that's ever happened to the A-League, and that's Bashar Berisha. To see what he's achieved at Brisbane Roar, he's now then gone and done the same thing at Melbourne Victory. I've seen him in close quarters, obviously, with the Hume City Cup run, and we've played them twice in friendlies, and now, obviously, in an FA Cup semi-final. And the work rate the man's got, he actually not only leads the charge on his own, but he's actually dragging his teammates along with him. So it's a great example to the young players in their squad, and scores goals. I mean, if he was doing all of that and not scoring goals, you'd still say he'd be a great asset, but he just bangs goals in for fun. And again, he's bagged another pair there. He scored in every round of the FFA Cup. And he's a major reason why these teams start winning championships.
He certainly has kick-start Melbourne Victory season, no question about that, Dean. Let's look ahead to Friday night's match. Obviously, Sydney and Brisbane, 1-2, a big game. Brisbane's made some early statements. What's your take on the match?
Look, it is the game of the round. It's first versus second. They've both had fabulous starts. Obviously, Brisbane Roar's situation is slightly different, where they've got a new coach in John Aloisi, who we all really know really well, not only from his Australian goal that most probably sent us to another level, but also in his coaching time at Melbourne City. So, you know, we know John, and I think he's done a really good job. I think there's a few highlights in there, real, from when you look at some of the players that are really playing well. You know, we talk about the Matthew Mackay's settled really well in there and getting that midfield role where most probably Luke Bratton used to sit in there. The thing I'm more excited about them is more the Brandon Borrello and the Jamie McLaren linking together, scoring three last week between them. And they're scoring goals. They're the top goal scorers in the league. And I think young Jack Ingots really, like, you know, he's had to fight that position out with the boy Pelenz that they signed from Western Wanderers. But in a couple of games, he's assisted and he's gone on great runs with his pace. And I just think that, you know, Brisbane seem to be hitting the straps really early on. And it looks like it's going to be a really positive season for them.
Absolutely. Dean, what about Saturday's game, Newcastle and Western Sydney Wanderers? Newcastle had a couple of amazing results away from home with a threadbare squad. We know the troubles up there. This is really an important game for Western Sydney Wanderers, considering the start they've had. What's your take on that?
Well, I think Newcastle Jets most probably are the surprise package so far. You know, we all know what the troubles were last year. It was pretty well documented, as did Western Sydney Wanderers. They're most probably, from a Western Wanderers point of view, they've got off to a better start, Edge. And, but I think with Newcastle Jets, I think they're just running on a high. You know, they've picked up 9 points. They're currently third in the table. They're going to be really confident, having beaten victory there last time out, that they can actually go and win it again and stay in that top one, two or three position. So, look, I'm most probably thinking Newcastle Jets, just based on maybe some of the inconsistencies we do still get with Western Sydney Wanderers, even though, you know, they got a result last week against Perth Glory. I just fancy Newcastle Jets on Saturday.
And briefly, mate, the Central Coast Mariners, Wellington and Perth Glory victory, just a tip on those two matches.
I think just on that, I mean, I think we just documented the Central Coast issues. Yeah, they're at home. Wellington, Phoenix, they've not got off to a bad start, 6 points. If they were to go there and win, and I know they've had troubles off the park as well, but if they were there to win, all of a sudden they'd find themselves in the top half of the table. So I've got a feeling that might be a draw. And on the big one, I mean, I didn't touch on Sydney FC, but for me, I just think Arnie has just got all that experience behind him, and I fancy at home with Schmelz and Brosk and Dimitrovic in the midfield, I can't see Sydney getting beat in a really, really tight affair.
Magnificent, mate. Well, we're talking to you live in the studio next week. Enjoy the rest of your break up in Port Douglas where you're sunning yourself there, mate. Dean, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Edge. Look forward to it.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. Next up, we've got Sebastian Hassett, one of the most respected sports writers in Australia in all sport, but the man to talk to when it comes to the Australian domestic game. He knows all around the ins and outs of every story in the A-League, but one of the questions on everyone's lips right now is, what's going on with the Wellington Phoenix and the FFA, Seb?
Gentlemen, pleasure to join you. And yeah, look, it certainly has been an incredible week or couple of weeks on this front. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I think everybody thought Wellington were just another team, you might say, there, and that they were going along without too many dramas. But, you know, their sheer existence has been plunged into total chaos by what the FFA's sort of really come to in denying them a 10-year licence, only saying to them, you know what, we won't even accept 10, we'll give you the chance to apply for 4, we won't even guarantee you that. Now, their licence technically runs out at the end of this calendar year, so of course, obviously they would see out this season, but really after that, I mean, their whole existence is in jeopardy now, gentlemen, and exactly what happens from here is very much up for debate. And what they bring to the league, I think all these things are going to get thrashed out. And look, I genuinely don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I think that the FFA is really playing a wait-and-see approach now. I think they've almost overplayed their hands in some respects in trying to sort of flush them out. But the response that we'll see from Wellington, the club and the people and the supporters over there, I think will really determine their existence going forward.
And David Gallop certainly didn't help the situation when he said no club has the right to squat on a licence. And Frank Lowy went further, telling the Sydney FC officials, including Graham Arnold and the Phoenix, to just get on with it. Now, I mean, that sort of suggests to me, as an observer and a close-hand watcher of the A-League since it began, that that's almost like a kick-out sort of comment that suggests we don't want you here anymore.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to read into it. I certainly read it that way. I was surprised at how pointed the message was. I mean, usually when it comes to Frank Lowy and David Gallop, their messages are a little bit more nuanced, perhaps a little bit more conciliatory. But on this occasion, look, I mean, to say that one of the clubs who, you know, they haven't really been a source of concern. They haven't really been a problem child in any way, shape or form. In fact, I think they've been one of the more solid citizens since they came into the A-League. To say that they're squatting on a licence was quite an extraordinary comment, I thought. But it probably gave a really good insight into where the FFA is thinking. And when you say squatting on a license, that means you're not doing enough. And basically, we need teams who are going to be high achievers. And right now, based on what the Phoenix have been bringing to the table to this point, it probably hasn't been enough. But I do think it will spark the people in Wellington and across New Zealand into action.
Seb, you know the FFA well. You know that when they release public statements, they don't just do things off the cuff. They actually consider them deeply. It was a very direct message. What's happening behind the scenes? As Wellington, have they not been engaging correctly? Have they been taking for granted their position in the A-League? Is the whole New Zealand experience underwhelming for the FFA? Do the politics of Asian football and Oceania play into this in any way? I mean, there must be reasons why the FFA has reacted so strongly, because they could have taken a number of pathways here. They could have, you know, they could have made the decision that Wellington's not in the long-term plans, but, you know, dealt with it privately behind the scenes and put out public messages like they were reviewing the situation. There was a lot of options they had, but they really did smack them over the back of the head.
Yeah, I think all the reasons you've just sort of touched upon there actually sort of almost added up, you might say, and that's sort of surprising, just because of they haven't been a problem club, and you just would have thought that at this point the FFA would have sought stability. But I think the key thing here is timing, and the key thing about everything that we know in the modern professional world of sport is money, and what brings in money into the A-League? Television rights.
And
what what brings in the most TV ratings? And far and away, it's derbies. Melbourne Derby and Sydney Derby rate their socks off, like finals, basically. And they know full well that if they could get more derbies and they could get more teams in those big cities, they think that they'd be able to tap into a broader population base and therefore be able to make it a more attractive proposition to the broadcasters. What the Phoenix brings to the table in terms of ratings is very, very little on both sides of the Tasman. And that's where there's a real problem, because Sky Sports New Zealand, they contribute what could best be described as a nominal figure to TV rights. So when you add those things up, their crowds have been falling a little bit, although they have had some great crowds in the past, and I think some of them might come back now. I think the FFA has been doing the numbers and saying, look, you just haven't been bringing what is required.
Seb, does New Zealand politics play into this? You know, they're branded Wellington Phoenix. Do the people in Auckland, do they give... you know, do they really care about the Phoenix? Is it just a Wellington thing? I understand the viewing audience of the Phoenix games in New Zealand is extremely low. Those things must be playing into it as well.
And before you go ahead, Seb, I just wanted to add to that comment. I spoke to a big sports fan, Kiwi mate of mine, the other day, and asked him that very question. He's from Christchurch, and he said, well, I'm not going to go for them. I spend half my life hating every other province in New Zealand in the other code that I follow, of course, you know, the religion of New Zealand being rugby. Why would I go for a team that's named after Wellington? And that seems to me to be one of the fundamental errors in the whole project.
Well, I mean, we did have a New Zealand named team, and they were called the New Zealand Knights, and they were the biggest flop the A-League's ever seen. So I don't necessarily subscribe to that. And I also think the fact that when they've played in Auckland in guest games, they've had over 20,000 people turn up. And when they played in Christchurch, I think they had 15,000 turn up.
So, but they've only got 3,000 members.
Well, look, I mean, absolutely. There are some anomalies here that back up the potential that exists there. The fact that in only their third season, they had the second highest crowd of the whole season, 32,000 for a final. I mean, we struggle to get that in some of our major markets, including here in Sydney, probably only Melbourne Victory could really compete with those numbers. So the potential is definitely there. That's something that I think has probably been overlooked in all of that. And I think the question is what we probably need to do if we were to look at sort of how can we make this team work rather than how can we kill them, is to go, well, where are those fans? How do we re-engage them? Whether they need a new arena, I'm a fairly frequent visitor over to Westpac Stadium, and I can tell you guys, it is an impressive facility, but completely inappropriate for the A-League, unfortunately.
This was what the 10-year licence was all about, was getting a boutique stadium and trying to underpin their viability moving forward.
They've got to get these things sorted out, guys. I think that's... Look, hopefully, I'm actually a bit of a supporter for the Phoenix. I think they bring more to the table than people think, and I would like to see them included. I'd like to see the A-League expand, absolutely. But I hope this is the cattle prod that gets them to sort out those sorts of issues. So they've got to get on the Wellington City Council. They've got to get on the New Zealand government. They've got to get everyone singing from the same song sheet for a new stadium. They need the fans to come back to the game. Because if they don't, then, you know what, maybe the FFA does have a point in pursuing their options closer to home.
Well, it sounds like Chairman Frank has well and truly given them a rocket, so we'll see how that plays out. But just assuming that, you know, Wellington's going to go up in smoke, we're not going to have a presence from New Zealand. Obviously, the big story that blew up and the big PR battle that between... Chairman Barlow and Chairman Frank, and then obviously the second PR message from the FFA, which was pretty direct to the guys at Sydney, which was, you know, don't get too far out of your comfort zone. This realistic option of a third team in metropolitan Sydney, what is behind it? How do you feel about it? I mean, you've got your finger on the pulse. What are the natives saying?
Look, the prospect, guys, of a team in... A third team in Sydney is something that has been on the books for a while. It's been something that everyone has been thinking and talking about here for some time. Whether we all foresaw that it would happen this fast, potentially as soon as next season, I don't think anyone saw coming, however. The fact that the FFA is the one driving it is probably the biggest surprise, I think, to me. I mean, it makes sense when you think about what their motivation is in terms of what I just spoke about before, in terms of the TV money, in terms of getting more eyeballs on the game, the appeal to broadcasters, sponsors and so on. That all makes a lot of sense, but it's the speed at which it's happening that I think would surprise a lot of people, considering how quickly they got the Wanderers up and running. But I think that experience has emboldened them. I think they're looking at what they did in Western Sydney, and they're going, hey, guys, you know, we did that in the space from the announcement. We did that 6 months later, they were kicking their first competitive ball against the Central Coast Mariners on a Saturday night. And I for one, couldn't believe how quickly they were able to turn that around successfully. I think there's a lot more challenges this time around, not least the fact that Sydney is fairly well divided up at the moment. The balance is actually very good. Whether we need to rush into a third team, I don't know. But it is a sprawling... area. It's an enormous area, Sydney, that really is much more divided than Melbourne. And it wouldn't surprise me in the future if a team in the southern Sydney area was successful, because probably to get maybe to Allianz Stadium or to get to Parramatta Stadium might be a minimum of 30 minutes. So that you could argue that there's 2 million people who aren't being wholly serviced by the two existing teams. Although I think right now at the moment, I think the market is being reasonably well met. So it's a juggling act. I think the FFA is really looking into the future, though. I think they're going, well, you know what, we can say that at the moment it might be fine, but 10 years down the track, wouldn't we rather have that extra presence? Wouldn't we rather have those extra derbies? Wouldn't we rather be creating those extra dollars, thumbs on seats, eyeballs on television screens? So I think that's what's motivating them at the moment.
Massive questions, Seb, mate. You answer them brilliantly, and all of our listeners will be watching this space, because they are two huge questions. Just what the future of the A-League looks like. Is it going to be an Australasian A-League, or is it going to be a localised A-League? We'll watch and see what happens, mate. Thank you very much, Seb. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app and also via TuneIn Radio. Next up, we've got Ben Summerford talking about all the Socceroo action going on around the country, not specifically the games coming up, but about all of the players who are contenders around this vast world of football that we live in. So, Edge, tell us a little bit more about our next guest.
Well, Ben writes for the Green and Gold Army on our website. He keeps us up to date with all the latest information on the Socceroos, how they're going, and you can catch him on ggarmy.com and also with 442. He's an outstanding writer. He's travelled with us to World Cups. And, Ben, welcome to the first edition of Box to Box.
Thanks, Edge. Yeah, good to be here.
Tell us, you cover the Socceroos players like no one other. You've been doing it for a long time. We're coming to an interesting time in our qualification period. And there's a lot of jockeying with players. The first comment that I want to make and get your feedback on is I think never before has the A-League been so prevalent in Socceroos. So we've seen Socceroos selection. We've seen sort of Aaron Moy develop here in the A-League, and he potentially is a starting 11 player. And no longer is it just about who's performing in Europe. How do you rate that based on your experience of following the Socceroos at Clubland in Europe so closely over a long period of time?
Yeah, I suppose it's all part of the generational change we've seen in the last probably decade where, you know, at the 2006 World Cup, we had guys like Chilena, Cahill, Kiewit, some big clubs in Europe, and naturally, it's changed, and the guys over there now are playing for smaller clubs. And naturally, there's some really good talent still in the A-League. And given the league's growth over the past, I suppose, 5 years especially, those players are actually playing at a pretty high standard comparable to Europe. So I think it's natural and it's exciting. Obviously, it's you know, when people get to see players week in, week out, you get to realise how good they are. And there's probably some good players in Europe who we don't see enough of. But, yeah, I think it's really beneficial for the national team. Guys like Aaron Moy are a perfect example.
And Ben, what does that mean for some of the young players that have taken the decision to go offshore? I mean, I'll give you an example. Jackson Irvine with Ross County. He's now got two caps with the Socceroos. Does this mean that players like him who are playing in the far-flung leagues and some of the lesser leagues down the divisions may well choose to come back home and play in the A-League?
Yeah, it's hard to be prescriptive on this one. I think there's two ways to the argument, and there's no right or wrong, really. Both are good options. Sometimes you find yourself at a club in Europe and it doesn't work out, and you have to come back home to the A-League, and sometimes you stay in the A-League and it doesn't work out there either. So, you know, it just depends on the player. But it is another option, which can only be good for the Socceroos. It can only be another avenue to strengthen the side, get players playing more regularly. So that's only a positive.
Ben, Mark Van Aken here, mate. I've snuck back into the studio. Interesting to hear what you just said, that there's some players that don't get what they deserve in terms of getting put in the limelight. You're a guy that watches them. Give us a list of two or three of those that we aren't sort of hearing about that you think are the next big thing.
Well, Jackson Irvine's a perfect one.
Besides him.
They're doing great things in Scotland. And, you know, had a really good year last year with Ross County, who were a really small club and somehow survived. And he probably found his feet late in the season and they went on a good run. So he's a really good example. I mean, you look at England's leagues and there's already a couple who've popped up. James Meredith's one has popped up, and I'm not sure if he's going to be a regular soccerer, but he's certainly a good player. Guys like Adam Federici, who's been doing it for, you know, the past decade, really. Very underrated goalkeeper. So there's a long list of guys who, you know, really have probably become forgotten players and fallen out of view, I suppose, but yeah, you know, had really good careers.
Ben, let's get down to some specifics. Mile Jedinek, you know, he's our captain. He has been the barometer for the team. Right in the lead up to the Brazil World Cup, he performed very well in Brazil. He's not getting a game for Crystal Palace. How worried should we be about Mile and his future?
I don't think we should be too worried at this stage. You know, he's next in line. He's behind Yohan Cabaye, who's, you know, a France international, a really good player. James McArthur, who's a really talented midfielder for Palace as well. So, you know, he's coming off the bench and getting minutes. I know it's not a lot, but he is clearly next in line. I suppose it's just the system that Pardew's employing at the moment at Palace. And, you know, McArthur and Cabaye are more creative than Jednak. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys goes elsewhere in January and Mile will find himself back in the side. So I think you probably need to assess at the end of the season if he, you know, if he's still third in line, you know, not getting the games he needs, and that's when he probably needs to ponder what next season.
And Tommy Urich in some pretty good form in Holland.
He's going great, yeah. It's been really pleasing to see that a guy has come straight out of the A-League, stepped into a really good standard league and you know, hit the ground running. I think he scored 4 goals in 5 or 6 games. And I spoke to Ange last week after the squad announcement. He was very excited about his form. Always good to make a good impression on a club when you just arrived there. So that only bodes well for him. And I think he made the point that guys like Urich, James Troisi, Tim Cahill are scoring goals. So Australia have got good attacking options at the moment, which is probably something we haven't had the last probably 12, 18 months.
Talk me through Tom Rogic, because every time I tune in to a European game with Celtic, he doesn't get a sniff, but he seems to be doing really well in the actual SPL. But what's the reason that he's not sort of getting that, getting the start in the European game, but firing on all cylinders in Scotland?
they've got a big squad, as they always do, and there's a bit of a rotation going on at Celtic. But as to why he doesn't get the go in the European games, I'm not too sure, to be honest. But I mean, look at the weekend. He was outstanding for Celtic. I think he was one of the best players on the field. He set up a goal and you know, caused all sorts of issues for Aberdeen, I think it was. So yeah, you know, he's coming on in leaps and bounds. Probably still nursing the body a little bit. He had a really tough 18 months, I suppose. So maybe they're just trying to manage him still. And you know, those flights to far-flung places, maybe not really agreeing with him.
And the Socceroos' own Benjamin Button, Tim Cahill, has just penned another deal in China. Added a few rooms to his mansion in Sydney, I'm sure. How long can we? I mean, it's an obvious question. Socceroos fans talk about it all day. You know, how long can we continue to expect Tim to be giving us the input and the time that he does at the elite international level?
Yeah, he continues to surprise us, doesn't he? He's inked the one-year deal, so that's obviously to the end of 2016 in China. Obviously, their season runs different to the way it does in Europe. So, you know, he'll still be playing at a reasonable level for that period, and who knows what's happening beyond that. I don't know if he's really ever really entertained the A-League too much. And, it's hard to say with Timmy. He's really surprised us in the past. And he's talked about going to Russia. That's still a long way away, but you never know. I'm a huge fan of Cahill, so you never know.
Talking to Ben Summerford from ggarmy.com and 442. Talk us through Luke Bratton. He's an interesting one. Obviously, left the A-League, got signed by Man City. Now on loan at Bolton. You've been keeping your eye on him?
Well, I have, yeah. You know, I think, you know, Bratton was left out of the Socceroos squad last week. Obviously, hasn't played for a long time. So he's made a really good move to England now, which is exciting. But at the moment, he just needs to get a bit of game time into him. He played for Bolton's under-21s on Monday and played a full 90 minutes, which is positive for him. Probably still a few weeks away, you'd say, from being in their first team. But a really exciting time for him. And again, Ange last week was really bullish about his chances of succeeding in England. You know, Man City's a huge club and it's going to be tough to break in there. But you know, a move like that opens doors and you never know what's happening for him.
Thanks, Ben. Mate, magnificent work, a fantastic insight, and I know the boys agree that this is the sort of fodder that every Socceroo fan, regardless of what club domestically that you follow or internationally you follow, that they want to hear this sort of detail, and equally they want to know from an expert, but they also want to know that Ange is really keeping an eye on the players wherever they're playing, because the player themselves, their families, their managers and so on, they're all the ones that really want to know about it. Thanks, Ben.
No problem. Pleasure.
Well done, mate. So that's almost the first hour of the first edition of Box to Box, guys. We've got a huge hour coming up next. We've got, out of the break, we've got John Cosmina coming up to talk about the FFA Cup this weekend and the fixtures for the Socceroos. We've got the magnificent John Stensholt. I just love listening to him and everything he's got to say about the business of the game. And, of course, our own correspondent on everything in Europe, Ben Soro Perez, with his debut. Edge. So you and Mark will join us in the next hour. This is Box to Box on NTS, News Talk Sport, on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for us on any number of various apps, but one of my favourites is TuneIn Radio. So go into the search engine, punch in TuneIn Radio, and look for NTS. So this is the first hour of Box to Box. A lot more coming up after the break. News is next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. The name, as our intro said, is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also find us on TuneIn Radio. We've had a massive first hour, but an even bigger second hour coming up. We've got John Stensholt from the Australian Financial Review. We're going to talk about business and his book on the first 10 years of the A-League. We've got Ben Soro Perez talking about all things Europe later on in the show. But first up, one of the honoured statesman of Australian football, Socceroo legend. He's done it all in the game. He doesn't need a magnificent introduction from me because we all know who he is. We're going to talk about the Socceroos and we're going to talk about the FFA Cup with John Cosmina. Welcome, John.
No, not a problem, Rob. Thanks, mate.
No, fantastic, mate. And look, I guess where do we start? The FFA Cup tradition continues. Year two, it's magnificent. But I think what we really want to talk about is the Socceroos and the match next week in Canberra against Kyrgyzstan, and really as to whether we go to Bangladesh. So what's your take on this match? From all accounts and all the numbers, it seems that if we can beat Kyrgyzstan and get the 3 points banked, then the Bangladesh issue sort of tends to fade into the background.
Well, are we playing in Bangladesh? Has that been confirmed yet?
No, it hasn't. And that's the query that's still up in the air as to whether the decision occurs at all or not. Does the question tie into the game, or is it purely a political one? So, no, we don't have the answer to that yet, Cozzy.
Well, we go up to Kyrgyzstan. We didn't struggle over there, but it was a hard game for us because playing in that region of the world is always difficult. We ended up coming back with the 3 points and we were just too good in the end. But I think the bigger issue is how your Kyrgyzstans and your Tajikistans and teams like that will travel to Australia. And I think it affects them a lot more than it does us. So whilst next week won't be an easy game, it's a game that we shouldn't lose. And we definitely can't afford to lose it because we're 4 points behind Jordan now in the group, and we do have a game in hand on them. So you know, that means we would fall further behind. But I can't see the Socceroos losing that match next week. Ange Postecoglou's brought a couple of players back into the squad. You know, Matty Ryan's back in. For one, I don't know if he'll start. Mile Jednak is the other. He hasn't been playing that much, so we'll just wait and see.
Cozzy, just well, you mentioned Jordan. Obviously, they're our rivals in the group. Just thinking back to the match that we recently played and lost, first time we've lost a game for a while, what was your take out of that? And was there any worrying signs? And, you know, how would have the team taken that? Because I was expecting that they would have expected to go there and win.
I think the way Ange manages more so than coaches is that he encourages and instills a lot of self-belief in the team. So the players probably wouldn't have dwelt too much on the loss, and that's not a bad way to be. It's up to the coaching staff to tweak the little things that will make a difference next time round when it's important. I thought we got exposed for a lack of pace at the back. You know, the penalty, for example, that Jordan scored was it was a ball over the top, and we just weren't. Matty Sprenovich just wasn't quick enough, and ended up committing the foul that brought about the penalty. Look, we played well enough; we had opportunities to score, but it's not always going to work out how you want. Ange plays very narrow in the front third of the pitch, so sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. I think his biggest issue you've got to deal with is an embarrassment of riches in that front half of the pitch.
And let's not forget. Sorry, Matt, I was just going to say, let's not forget we didn't do it easy against Kyrgyzstan. They almost equalised early in the second half in that game away.
They
do prove a dangerous banana skin if we're not on our game.
Excuse me, yes, it is, but it. but we're at home. I think, as I said earlier, the Aussies travel a lot better than the opposition do.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I guess the nature of the Asian sides over the journey's proven that. You just look at that Jordan result. It's a different team when they come to Australia, and then they play at home in front of the parochial local crowd. They lift, and we saw what happened. But I guess the fact that we've all seen the Asian Cup and what a competitive competition that was. Admittedly, we played brilliantly generally throughout, and we ought to be able to bring some of that form to the match against a side like Kyrgyzstan. But if, as we segue into the conversation about Bangladesh, we don't go there and the FIFA decision is that we should and we choose not to, then we forfeit and we hand over the 3 points, then all the pressure gets piled on. Does that decision happen before Kyrgyzstan? Is there pressure from the FFA to FIFA to make the decision before? That's all up in the air, isn't it? And it puts added pressure on this Canberra game.
Yeah, look, as I said, you know, one of Ange Postecoglou's greatest strengths is man management. And the players will be focused on the here and now, which is the game next Thursday night, Tuesday night, the 12th, yeah, sorry, next Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So they won't worry too much about Bangladesh until the need arises. You've got to, as a footballer, and especially in a tournament or a group stage scenario like we're in at the moment, you've just got to do what you've got to do when you need to do it, and then get the result you need, worry about what you have to do in a week or 10 days or a month's time afterwards.
Cozzy, just a couple of narrow questions. Is Aaron Mooy consolidated his start, his place in the starting 11, in your opinion?
I think he played well in the last game. I think he's probably got to grow into his Socceroo role. And as I said before, I think Ange has an embarrassment of riches in that front half of the pitch. Now, if Aaron Mooy plays alongside either Miller Jednak or Mark Milligan, what do you do with Tom Rogic, who is a very creative number 10? What do you do with Max Luongo, who doesn't really suit starting in a higher and wider position as he has in the last couple of games, so that you can fit Tommy Rogic and Aaron Mooy into midfield? So that's what I mean. Ange has got a bit of juggling to do. You've got to look at what's the best outcome for that particular situation. Now, for me, Mooy is a good player. He's a very good player. Whether he is a consistent Socceroo yet remains to be seen. And as I said, I don't think Ange will maybe give Milne a start. He hasn't played much since returning from injury for Crystal Palace. It seems like he might even be on the out there. So, you know, Mark Milligan will definitely start. And I would expect Aaron Mooy to play alongside of him. Then you're looking at Tommy Rogic or Max Luongo. Now, Tommy's had two games. Maybe Max can go back into that number 10 role that he played in the Asian Cup so effectively.
All interesting thoughts, Cozzy. Let's think about Bangladesh for a moment. In your career, do you ever remember a time when you were concerned or worried about a place that you were going to go and play for the Socceroos?
No, not really. There wasn't. I played in Israel a couple of times, and it was probably... that was interesting in that, you know, they weren't at war with anybody, but they live in a fairly volatile situation. But we were probably more concerned about getting out of the ground afterwards because we won. And at Ben Gurion Stadium there, but it wasn't... it's never really feared for your life. I suppose this is a totally different scenario because there is a terror threat there, and the cricket team have already cancelled their tour. One would hope that I've always sort of had this underlying belief, and maybe it's a bit blasé of me, but I think football might be one step too far, if you know what I mean, because football is actually a very important part of the social fabric of all of the countries in the Middle East.
But you're saying you think that they wouldn't go there and that we should take the risk and play the game?
Look, it's a hard one. I personally, as a player, I think I would like to go. But it's not a decision that I guess the players get to make. It's a decision that's made by either the FFA in consultation with the government, and the way governments are these days, they're certainly going to err on the side of caution, aren't they?
That's right, Cozzy, and it's a massive, massive decision if you get it wrong. We don't want to go there. So, I guess we've speculated enough on that. We've got a little bit of time left, mate. Give us your brief 60-second preview of the FFA Cup and how you see that one playing out.
It should be a cracking final. I mean, Melbourne Victory at home played really, really well against Wellington on Monday night. Basically the perfect practice match for a cup final coming up in 6 days' time. They're in form. Perth aren't. Perth will be in their second successive FFA Cup. And they didn't perform all that well in Sydney last weekend against the Wanderers, but it almost was as if their minds were on this Saturday night rather than the game that they were playing in at the Wanderers. So it's going to be a good one. I think in the end, Melbourne at home will certainly be too good for Perth. It should be a good match. But Perth are battlers. You know, they made West Sydney really fight for the 3 points last week, and although they didn't play all that well, they still caused them some problems. They may have a few players back, like Diego Castro and Georgie Sandor, who I think have still yet to really put their stamp on the A-League this season, but certainly the players that we'll need to watch out for in the weeks to come.
And a score victory up by how many, mate?
I think Perth are maybe capable of one, but victory will be a 2-3-1 win.
2-3-1 win to Perth. Cozzy, magnificent as always, mate. You're succinct, you're decisive, you call it as you see it, and we're all ears when we're listening to you, mate. You're going to be a fundamental part of this program as we go forward, and we're really grateful for your time this evening. John Cosmina.
Thank you.
I'm Danielle Pogson. Russia has suspended flights to Egypt as investigations continue into what caused an airliner to crash in the Sinai Peninsula. President Vladimir Putin has now ordered the government to come up with a plan to bring home stranded Russian
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
And you are on Box to Box on NTS with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app and also on TuneIn Radio. Just hit TuneIn Radio, find the search bar, type in NTS, and there you have it. So welcome back. And we've got a guest we're really looking forward to talking to. He's one of the most authoritative spokespeople on sport and business in this country. He's written a magnificent book on the first 10 years of the A-League. We want to talk to him about both those subjects. John Stensolt, sports business feature writer with the Australian Financial Review, amongst many strings to his bow. Great to have John on board, isn't it, Edge?
Absolutely, and let's get straight into it. The Barclays Premier League is a commercial juggernaut, John. We know that. The UK domestic rights alone yielded the Premier League £5.1 billion for the next three-year period. We know that the Premier League's in the process of concluding its international round of rights, and here in Australia, to some people, surprisingly, awarded to Optus over the incumbent Fox Sports and a couple of other bidders. Global television insiders, they tell us the bidding process for the Barclays Premier League rights is purely brutal. It's all about money. Incumbency really means little. John, welcome to you. We want to get into this because the fans want to know, how on earth are we going to watch Barclays Premier League through Fetch TV? Or will it be something else?
Well, it's a very interesting question, gentlemen. And yeah, I think we're all a bit sort of, gobsmacked a bit this week that Optus, essentially a telco, a mobile phone company, now has the rights to the English Premier League. Look, it's not unknown throughout the world. I mean, BT Sport in the UK, BT, which has risen from what was a telco into what's starting to, get into, television and broadband, so on and so forth. That has some rights over there. So yeah, it's happening here in Australia too. So, look, what the Optus boss here in Australia has said to us in the Financial Review this week is that effectively it's going to look the same, but which is very nice on paper. I think that to me that means there's going to be some sort of a subscription TV service, and as you've alluded to, probably Fetch. There'll be you'll be able to watch it digitally as well, and may well involve iPad apps, mobile phones, and getting highlights the next day on your mobile and that sort of thing as well. So. It may look similar, as I said, on paper, but whether it has the reach and the scope that a Foxtel and Fox Sport did is another question altogether.
And John, have you spoken to anyone at Optus to give you some background on what their plans are? Because you just go onto social media, you look at some of the comments pages on the newspapers, there's a lot of outrage out there. There are people that are filthy that they've invested their money, they've committed, they think they've got this. But what they want? They want the Premier League, but they also want the A-League, and they're thinking, I like a few other sports here and there. Am I just going to be reamed when it comes to having to pay for all this stuff?
Yeah, it is a bit of decoupling of what are essentially the two biggest sort of football assets. Although, if we chuck the World Cup and Euros, perhaps in there every 2 years or 4 years. Yeah, look, it is dovetail very nicely for Fox, didn't it? You'd have a couple of games on Saturday night. Yeah, league maybe a game over in Perth will lead into an early EPL game or something like that. But is the consumer the winner out of this? Well, the problem is, I think the consumer will probably have to end up paying for both. So at least to start with, I wouldn't rule out Optus going after some A-League rights as time goes on, but I don't think that necessarily means a full suite of television rights. I think what you might see, and look, they're certainly putting out the feelers as to where they can get the vision out to as much as possible. It wouldn't shock me if, perhaps a game or two ended up on, free-to-air television. To add it as almost like a taster for the rest of the coverage that Optus would have. But look, Optus have paid, US $45 million or so for this, so they need to make some sort of money back from it in return. So there's going to be a subscription element to it, whether it's Fetch or whether you're paying for it, the IPTV, other ways, mobile, et cetera, you're going to have to pay for it, which I guess is effectively what people are paying for now through Foxtel.
John, what's it mean for the FFA? Should they be bullish about a new entrant into the landscape of football television broadcast rights? Will Foxtel change its strategy? Will the FFA be happy today, or will they be a little bit circumspect?
I think they were very intrigued by it, and they were a bit gobsmacked by the amount of money that Optus are paying for the rights. I mean, that US $45 million is a lot more than what FFA are getting from Fox and SBS for the domestic rights at the moment. There's a couple of schools of thought on this one. Without the EPL, Fox Sports aren't going to really care much about football at all, and may well dump the A-League. The way I look at it is this way, and I think at the moment, and perhaps I'm being more optimistic than pessimistic about it when it comes to Fox, they need content in the summertime. Now, most of their sport, the NRLs, the AFLs, the V8s, and so on, is in our winter. They need a compelling enough reason for people to keep their subscription up in the summer. And you've got to remember that, you've got to understand that they have a reasonable amount of people who do switch off, for a few months over summer, get it back on when the footy's back on, so to speak, the other codes I'm talking about. They're going to need stuff in the summer. They lost the Big Bash cricket a couple of years ago to Channel 10, if you remember. So it means that, the A-League, for its trials and tribulations it's going through, it does provide, at the moment, five games a week of live content every weekend. Can you imagine what Fox Sports may well look in the summertime without that? I mean, we're talking about a station or a business that has five channels at the moment. They need stuff on it.
Absolutely. And as you say, the way that the sporting landscape is being broken up at the moment. I know this is a football program, but Fox Sports is under siege right now. They've been shut out of the NRL broadcast deal, and they're trying to get back in on the table there. They've now just lost the Premier League. This starts to suggest an entirely different landscape in terms of Australian consumption of sport on TV, on devices, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they're going to deal themselves back in the game with the NRL. They're going to get that Saturday game back, and very strong mail about that. Channel 9 will give up some rights. So they will, I think what you'll probably see, now it depends on what price tag they put to it, is they're going to get every NRL game, like they have every AFL game. The word coming out from them is they want live and they want local sport. Does that mean less international sport, like the EPL? Clearly, because they've lost that out. Other football, they've had the La Liga, remember, as well, and other bits and pieces. I think that all is okay for the A-League, but, the ratings, they're not happy with the ratings again this year. They're down again. They're distinctly unimpressed with how the FFA has marketed the A-League at the start of the A-League season, which, really hasn't been much marketing at all. I mean, I can't think for the life of myself what advertising I've seen on TV, for an A-League game or much advertising at all. So Fox Sports aren't too happy, but, they're probably going to have to go along and do some sort of co-investing with the A-League and help bankroll its improvement, which is what you're hearing David Gallop talk about these days. He wants a television partner to come with him. Well, it remains to be seen, but like I said, I think Foxtel needs stuff in the summer and the A-League does provide them something.
John, that's sensational analysis, and we thank you for that. But you're not just here to talk about the machinations of Optus and football broadcasting rights. You have published a book that every soccer fan in Australia should read, in my opinion. The inside story to the tumultuous first decade of the A-League. I reckon you've had a heap of fun doing this. How much fun has it been? You've just reading the book, you sense that you had fun making it.
Oh, look, I did have a lot of fun, to be fair. It was also a lot of hard work. Believe me, I've got a full-time job at the same time, and I did take some time off. And it's been a busy, it was a busy time. But, I've got some magnificent memories from doing it. Look, football, like sport, like other sports, just throws up this, you know, eclectic mix of colourful characters that I got to speak to. I mean, I spoke to a lot of them through my day job writing about the business of sport anyway. But, look, you know, interviewing the Clive Palmers of the world about his time at Gold Coast, you know, talking to all sorts of other people as well, from Frank Lowy down, the Gallops, the O'Neills, you know, Ben Buckley spoke, you know, to me, you know, several times. He was very kind with his time. You know, the guy who hadn't spoken to the media since he left the FFA. So, I mean, it was good to glean sort of, you know, stuff from them. You know, people like Bruce Tutte, John Hutchinson, Central Coast. I mean, these guys spoke eloquently, really, you know, interesting sort of stuff about, you know, really that what was effectively a whole new league and just an amazing time if we think back 10 or 11 years ago now, just about when it was all being set up. It's been a rollercoaster ride, and it continues to be so. And, look, it was great fun. I mean, I'm a long-time football fan, so it was a bit of a labour of love. But hopefully, you know, hopefully we've given some people something entertaining to read. That's what we set it out to do.
Yeah, dead set, John. It absolutely is. And speaking from the point of view of a person who's covered the A-League for our radio network for 10 years, and I stood on the running track at Olympic Park when those first baby steps were taken, and we just saw that organic growth of the game, and you knew straight away that the A-League was going to work because you saw the passion in the crowds. And look, we do respect and pay homage to all the great ethnic diversity that created the foundation of the game in this country, and that's one thing that we critically need to pay attention to into the future, so that we don't lose that magnificent heritage of the various immigrants who've come to this country and made the game what it is. But the A-League's certainly been a success. Now, mate, you tell us, it's coming up to Christmas. You can buy the book at all good and bad bookstores, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the hope. Wherever you want it. You can even order through my co-author's, Sean Mooney's website as well, the Leopold Method. You know, all the usual sort of digital sort of things as well, your iBooks, your Amazons of the world, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, so look, we've had some really, really kind and positive feedback about it. So we're very humbled by that. I said we had a good crack at what we hope was an entertaining read, and amazing diversity.
And before you say goodbye to John, the book is called A-League, The Inside Story of the Tumultuous First Decade, written by John Stensel.
I was actually going to ask John to see whether he's actually sent Clive Palmer an autographed copy.
Yeah.
No, I haven't spoken to Clive for a little while, though. I had a bit of Richmond as well, so I'm going to come across his path. Look, we haven't got any lawsuits from him yet, so maybe that's one good indication. But I know that people are working for him, that we're pretty keen to have a way. Look, you know, Clive's a Watson all sort of character, and I think he's moved on. You know, the A-League is probably a bit of a platform for him to get into a bit of notoriety in the federal politics, and look what he's done ever since.
Senator Clive.
He's moved on from there.
Absolutely. But, I mean, everyone should read the book if you're interested in football and colourful characters like Clive. I mean, there's been an amazing group of tycoons that the FFA have been able to rope into these A-League clubs. Some of them good, some of them bad. Some of them are still there, some of them are not. So make sure you get out and get the book.
And credit also to your co-author, Sean Mooney, as well there, mate.
Thanks very much.
We'll talk to you again, John Stensholt. Magnificent stuff. Do yourself a favour, to quote Molly Meldrum, go out in there and buy it for yourself. Buy it for a family member. It's going to be a magnificent Christmas present. Up next, after the break, we've got Ben Soro Perez with Focus on Europe.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
You are on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley, and we've covered a lot on the first episode of Box to Box. We've had John Cosmina, John Stensholt. We've had Sebastian Hassett. We've had everybody who is anybody so far. I think it's an understatement, perhaps, but maybe it's an overstatement. I don't know what it is. We're on digital radio. We're streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for us on TuneIn Radio. But we're not only about introducing talent that is well-known and famous around the country, but we're also looking at people who are the rising stars of talent. And we talked to Ben Summerford earlier on with the Australian Socceroo rap, and now we want to introduce you to Ben Soro Perez with Focus on Europe. So, Edge, you give us a little bit of background on Ben before he rolls into his work.
Well, Ben's our secret agent. He's been a great pickup. We've just ripped him out of Brighton and Hove Albion. where he's been recently, the media man. He's returned home to Australia, although he does speak like someone who's lived in Brighton for a while. We'll get to hear his voice in a moment, but we're really, really fortunate to have Ben. He's our European correspondent. He'll be joining us each week, giving us all the insight and the news of what's happening over in the UK and Europe and beyond. So, Ben, the first question I have for you, are you ready for it, is tell us about and Hove Albion. What does that mean? Brighton and Hove, I mean, they've been pretty competitive in the English Championship. You work for them. Tell us what Hove Albion means.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're on a 16-game unbeaten run at the minute, stretching back to the tail end of last season. So it's all promising. And the Hove Albion is just a little bit next to Brighton, basically. So you've got the Brighton bit, and if you live in Brighton, you're Brighton. If you're Hove, you're Hove, actually. And that's kind of where the name comes from.
So there are Hove supporters out there and denizens of Hove who are listening on the app and thinking, Edge, mate, you need to research more. You need to understand.
No,
I mean,
no,
I knew all about it.
Rob. You asked that question in pre-production, so we thought we'd ask. Hey,
and I read Roy of the Rovers when I was a kid. I know all about it, mate. I was a paper boy. I've got a stack a foot high.
That's fantastic. Ben, but let's get into it. You've got some news from Europe for us, and we're going to have a bit of a talk. Obviously, off the top, tell us about what's going on at Chelsea.
Yeah, first off the bat, obviously hard to avoid is the issue surrounding Jose Mourinho. The will he, won't he stay on at the club. Recent news from the UK is that apparently Monaco have approached Chelsea and offered to pay the $35 million that is his buyout clause of his, well, the remainder of his contract. It was turned down by Abramovich in what must be quite the faith, I guess.
Well, I guess that's the thing. I mean, the point is there, and the words that you can clearly hear that you're searching for are the fact that Roman Abramovich is giving him one last chance. He's got so much tied into his time with Jose.
I'm still recovering from £35 million. No wonder.
Absolutely.
Being speechless.
But let's not forget the fact that that you don't have to like Jose Mourinho, but he's brought glory to Chelsea, and in the world that is the English Premier League, you're either a coach that's been sacked or that you're going to be sacked, and he knows the game as well as anybody. But for Roman Abramovich to give him that lifeline is unusual, but he's earned it, hasn't he, Ben?
I think you can look at it both ways. You can say yes, he has earned it, or you can look back at past indiscretions. He left Chelsea under a cloud last time. He went to Inter, he had great success at Inter, huge compensation package to go to Real Madrid. Wheels fell off there, very similar to this, turned the players, the club generally against media, very short, very abrupt interviews. And the same thing seems to be happening here. Now, perhaps the length of his contract is a reassuring factor to him that he has got that ability and he will stay on. But
he must be in an enormous amount of pressure. I think we've got a grab of a press conference that was held earlier this week. Let's go to it. Nige, can you...
Jose, there's been so much speculation about why the form is so different this season to last season. Same bunch of players, different results. We don't know.
Same manager.
Do you know, essentially, why the results are so different this season?
Yes, I know.
Can you give us any clues?
No, because I'll be here for a long time. It's a combination of factors. And some of them I don't want even touch them. And yes, I know.
I think that covers everything we just went over, and that his approach to the media as a whole at the minute suggests that he is someone under pressure, regardless of what, you know, people in the media may be speculating at the moment.
And he's made a sport of baiting the English media. We all know that, and he's enjoyed it in good times. But now the claws are out. They're sensing blood, and there's no better media in the world than to draw blood than the English media. And just listening to John Terry today talking about how he has, well, we talk about the full support of the board, but when you roll out the big gun and you say that you roll out the captain, you haven't got many weapons left in your arsenal to have the captain come out and say we're all fully supportive of him. But then on the same page, John Terry starts to, you know, he's not a guy that you see a lot in the media, but when he comes out and starts to slag off against former well-known players with good careers and bags them himself, you can sense the tension that's coming out of the club. It's palpable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, if you look back previously, the same thing happened at Real Madrid. He went in for whatever reasons. There were disagreements between him and Iker Casillas. Casillas was, I think he was vice-captain at the time, and he was slowly distanced and forced out of the team And off he went. I don't think that's the case that will happen to John Terry. But...
Ben, people in the the commentary and the stuff we're reading online suggests that it's only a matter of time. Mourinho's finished. Who do they replace him with? What are the bongo drums? What do you think of the options?
But there's been speculation that Carlo Ancelotti may be enticed back to the club. But you have to wonder if that's a clutching at straws approach from Chelsea. I mean, he's been there before and he has had success, but he's going to inherit a team that needs to replace an ageing defence, John Terry. Gary Cahill's not getting any younger, not necessarily playing any well. And there are issues throughout the club. I mean, Cesc Fabregas came out the other day and refuted allegations that he was leading the revolt against Mourinho. So that would suggest that there's issues of unity. And I think whoever they bring in will have to have proven success.
Well, let's leave Chelsea. Let's jump on the M1, head up the highway to Manchester United. There's been a bit of action there during the week as well. They've failed to score in any of their last three EPL games. Tell us what's going on up there.
Yeah, I think it's just been a struggle. Van Gaal, for everything that people said about his Dutch team at the last World Cup playing exciting football, have done almost anything but so far this season.
So I'm relieved, but I'm also proud, because it's not so easy. And also in the golden victory, in the golden years of Manchester United, I have read, is they never won against a Russian team at home. So it's not... Everybody thinks it is easy, but it is not easy. It is not easy for Manchester United, but it is never easy for not one club in the Champions League to win.
The fact that he's referring to past results, things that he wasn't involved in at the club, suggests that there is a little bit, perhaps, pressure on him to start getting results. Wayne Rooney's goal in midweek in the Champions League was his first for 404 minutes. It may have put him level, second all-time in the club scoring charts, but this is not the form that you'd expect from a club, an international captain. And the reaction when he substituted Anthony Martial in that Champions League game was noticeable. You couldn't hide from the boos. And that suggests that all is not well with the way that the club are playing at present.
And some of the other teams that are, one minute you see Leicester last year are fighting for survival, and next minute they're rubbing shoulders with the big boys. How long could this go on for?
I think that's anyone's guess at the minute. I mean, famed as being the Tinker Man previously, Claudio Ranieri seems to have them playing some lovely football. They've got exciting talent. They've got Jamie Vardy up front, who's just broken into the England team, scoring for Will at the minute. And they will. I think the issue they face is that perhaps come the winter transfer window, there will be eyes from other clubs and around them who may think, a little bit extra. You're not buying an A grade talent necessarily, but you're buying someone who can perform. So I think January will be a good indication of how far they can go.
What about the Gunners? Back to London. What about the Gunners? Are they a chance to shed the nearly men mantra when take off the title?
I think you have to consider them. I think performances this year have been hugely improved. Admittedly, they'll head into the North London derby at the weekend against a resurgent Tottenham team, I think you could say. Have scored eight in their last two games. They look somewhat rejuvenated and more defensively solid under Pochettino, and I think for an Arsenal side that can be bullied, the physicality of this could be a key component of the match.
Mate, look, that's magnificent, Ben. A fantastic start. You clearly have the insight and the detailed knowledge that we're all looking for, and that understanding of the nature of the different clubs. We're going to work through the various clubs throughout the course of the season. We're going to work ourselves around Europe, and we really want to dig down into some of those deeper stories and just get an insight from somebody who's born and bred and really adept with the ways of the English Premier League and the various clubs of Europe. So well done, Ben, mate. We'll look forward to seeing you again next week.
Yeah, thanks very much.
That's fantastic. So, Ben Soro-Perez, focus on Europe. We're going to spend a lot of time on Europe, but we're going to look around all of the competitions around the world as well as we go forward. So, magnificent from Ben. Stoppage time coming up next. We're going to welcome Mark Van Aken back into the studio. This is Box to Box on NTS, streaming on the NTS app. You can search for us on TuneIn Radio and, of course, on digital.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all. We'll be right back.
And you are with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. It is box to box. It's the end of the first episode. The assistant referee has put the board up. He says there's 9 minutes to go in stoppage time. This is NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for us to listen anywhere in the world on TuneIn Radio. Just type in NTS into the search bar. Tell your friends, tell your family. We hope you've enjoyed the first show. But Mark Van Aken is back in the studio, and he's got some kind of random segment that he wants to roll with here. He tells us he's prepared a little bit to...
Got no idea what he's going to turn up with.
Yeah, he's got something. So, Mark, what
just
have you got for us,
brother? Just need you to be closer to the mic there, Mike.
Okay, how's that?
I was joking. Okay, look, I haven't had enough of Jose Mourinho yet. I know Ben covered him, but we've got some audio. Nige, the producer, let's hear what... This is post-Liverpool on the weekend. This is what the gaffer had to say to the media.
After a fabulous start, the game just got away from you there.
I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say about the game at all?
Nothing. I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say about the Lucas decision that left him on the pitch?
Nothing to say. I have nothing to say.
The Costa clash?
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
Do you not think it's time to have a chat to the fans just to give them some message, give them indication of your thinking?
The fans are not stupid.
We heard them chanting your name.
The fans are not stupid.
You did say before this game that you weren't worried. Are you a little bit more worried now?
No. I'm worried about what?
Your future, your own position at the club, the backing of the board?
No.
Nothing about the game at all?
At all.
No individual performance you'd like to pick out?
No.
Nothing about the performance going ahead?
Nothing.
Nothing about the way we could fix it?
I cannot say.
Thank you for your time, Jose.
Thank you.
That's an awesome piece. You know, it reminded me of the pre-Super Bowl last year where Marshawn Lynch from
Seattle. Get fine.
I'm on just here, go, get fine. Yeah, mate, well done. Okay, you set the bar high. Continue.
That's probably it. How long have we got to go? Eight minutes? No. I just love what's going on with Jose. It's the third year Blues. He has it everywhere he goes. He doesn't want to talk. He's been pushing over little kids in the streets of London.
But he was stalked by that kid, wasn't he?
Well, the kid was just trying to get a selfie. Come on. He's being sued by his former doctor. That's come up this week. It's just all going wrong for Jose. And it's funny, interesting the point Ben made with Monaco coming in, offering to buy him, because it just seems at the moment Jose is doing everything he can to get sacked.
So tell me, what's the next step to get sacked? They keep on losing. I mean, right now, I know it's ridiculous to say this side of Christmas, but unless they start to bag a few wins in the short order, they are seriously going to be hanging dangerously around the drop zone.
What about a sex tape? Everyone loves a sex tape.
Well, that's probably next out there, mate. Well, so I'll leave that with you.
Nice segue, because what I loved during the week, I think it was on Wednesday, Karim Benzema, arrested by French police after being accused of blackmail relating to a sex tape featuring Mathieu Valbuena. And I'd say no bueno on that one. I'm not quite sure. I mean, this is not made up. This is real stuff. So that was during the week. So still a bit more to play out there. Another one. Michael Edgley, are you aware Vincenzo Grella is a player agent?
I wasn't aware of that. I'm just wondering about how the advice goes between Vinny and his clients.
He knows the game inside out, but I just wonder, and I'm casting aspersions, and I've never met Vinny in person. I know you have, actually, over in Brazil. But I just wonder how Vinny would go with the kind of legal mumbo-jumbo that goes together with that side. Now, during the week, he has...
What are you suggesting, Mo?
I'm just saying, on the surface, I'm just not sure Vinny would be... I don't think he'd have a law degree, for starters. I know that's one of the... And he obviously would have had to have gone
through...
He's
been to the University of Life. Look...
Of Hard Knocks.
It is, look, I loved Vinny as a player. I thought he was so important to us in a time when we had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. Don't know how he's going to go as a player agent, just quietly.
Well, he is the agent of Terry Antonis, and he's come out this week, he being Vinny Grella, saying that Terry is probably the best player of his generation. I assume he's talking in the context of Australia. He's battling for fitness at Polk, playing over in the Greek Super League. So put big raps, put a lot of pressure on his own player there. But Vinny, again, one area I wouldn't be questioning him is knowing his talent on the park. Now, again, we've talked about Jose. Chelsea legend Gianfranco Zola has revealed that he dreams of taking charge at Stamford Bridge again someday. And he said, during the week, he said, my dream, let it say my ambition, is to be Chelsea manager again someday in the future. I know Ben stepped out of the studio. He's got a smirk on his face for that one. He says, however, I realise that I need to improve as a manager if I want to get there, and I'm working hard to achieve my goal. Qatar is helping me a lot in this regard. He's coaching Al Arabi in Qatar. I'm not sure that's the stepping stone to one of the top clubs in the Premier League, Rob.
I don't think so either, mate. But he might be in line for the job sooner than later if Jose keeps going the way he's going. He might well be Jose B.
Okay. Are we still on air?
I think we are.
Okay, disturbed at the downturn in the mining sector, Tony Sage, the Perth Glory owner, has acquired an 85% stake in Uruguayan pharmaceutical player Winter Garden Biosciences, which, wait for it, gents, manufactures medical-grade marijuana for worldwide distribution. Does this explain some of the decisions in the head office over the last few years at Perth Glory?
Edge?
Oh, I think it'll keep the shed pretty happy. I'd imagine they'd be pretty comfortable with that investment. Just on that, Mark, do you think the Perth Glory fans have had enough of him? Are they over him?
I think they might be.
Finished over him?
Look, on a serious note, Perth Glory were one of the great clubs of the NSL. They've underwhelmed in the A-League. Of course, they are tomorrow night playing in the FFA Cup final. They're still smarting that they didn't get that they weren't hosting the final. Of course, the crowd they got to their semi-final was really poor. That said, so was the victories. But I know David Gallop came out a few months ago and sort of said to fans, hey, calm down. These are the guys putting the money in. That's all well and good. But, yeah, he's on the nose. Until he's gone, I don't think you're going to see them. I know the NBL is getting a resurgence right around Australia, but Perth Wildcats, even last year, when the NBL didn't exist anywhere else in the country, were getting 11,000 people a game. Yet you probably wouldn't see 11,000 in a Glory game, an outdoor sport. So, no, they need to change. Tony Sage, I know he's put a lot of money in. His heart is probably in the right place. But I think until he's gone, the mail I'm getting out west is that they won't be on board with the team.
I think they got one last chance, and that's their CEO, Peter Philopoulos. He is a good
operator. Yep.
He's been around a long time. He's done a great apprenticeship in the commercial side of many professional sports. It's really up to him now. I think he's got a tough gig, but if anyone can do it, he can.
Now, quickly, we talked to John Cosmina, obviously, early in the show, where you guys did. Now, some of the stats around the Socceroos. If we're worried about a loss this week in Canberra, don't be, or next week in Canberra. What have I got? I've lost my way here. Tuesday week with Bangladesh, of course, we're going on the road as well. The last time Australia lost a World Cup qualifier at home was against China back in 2008. Since then, we're 10 wins, 2 draws. Pretty strong. Australia scored 26 goals so far in 2015, the most in a calendar year. Who cares, Mark? Get on with a good one. Kyrgyzstan, here we go. Undefeated in their last 3 matches, including a nil-all draw with pool leaders Jordan. Everything points towards a Socceroos victory in Canberra. If you're listening in the capital, get to the game.
And just when it points, that's when you get worried, because as as we well know, and we saw happen in Jordan, there's nothing you can take for granted. I seriously am a little concerned about this whole thing going the way that we don't expect it. If this Bangladesh match gets wrapped up and doesn't go ahead, we really desperately need this
here's
one.
The,
there's a
here's
lot of
the
pressure.
Stat here's the stat I was looking for. We've never lost consecutive World Cup qualifying matches since joining the AFC.
Magnificent, mate. So look, Mark, thank you very much for your time, mate. It's been magnificent. This is the end of the first episode of Box to Box on NTS. Edge, a magnificent start to our program, and we hope the first episode of many, many more. And mate, we'll see you next week before we wrap it up.
Thank you, Rob. Fantastic effort, Rob Gilbert. And let's look forward to next week.
Well done, mate. So that's it for week one of Box to Box. We thank our guests John Cosmina, John Stensalt, Sebastian Hassett, of course, Ben Summerford and Ben Soro Perez, my co-host Michael Edgley, and our magnificent news hound Mark Van Aken, and of course our mates at Chemist Warehouse, Mario Tasconi and Sam Gantz, magnificent supporters of Australian sport. Whenever there's ever sport in Australia, they're the ones there. So that's Box to Box for week one. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other with the greatest game in the world, and that game is football.